This is The Parkland Walk by historian Stephen Hobbs on behalf of the Heartland Peninsula Association, adapted for audio. This is one of a series of four heritage walks that uncover some of the fascinating history across the Heartland Peninsula. This is Walk 2, the Parkland Walk, a circular walk of approximately 2 miles that will take you through the parklands of Heartland Abbey and those of the previous manorial owners, both of which are a display of status within their historic periods. The walk is on variable terrain, including footpaths, green lanes, meadowland and road, and can sometimes be muddy. The surfaces are not appropriate for wheelchairs. As the walk starts and finishes in Heartland, there are shops, cafes and pubs for refreshments, and interesting galleries and potteries to visit. There are toilets, including disabled toilets, by the main car park where the walk begins. You may find it useful to download the text version of this walk, available along with all the other walks and information on places to stay, eat, visit and explore from www.heartlandpeninsula.co.uk. Please use this audio responsibly. Take care to stand off roads and away from traffic when listening to the commentary. You are responsible for safely using the audio material. Let's begin. Start from the car park off the square in Heartland Village. Exit west through the car park entrance onto the square. This is the traditional centre of what was the ancient borough of Harton, established in about 1290. The large building on the right, west, is now the St John's Art and Craft Centre, and was previously the site of St John's Chapel of Ease. In turn, the chapel was built on the site of the earlier town hall, this being the focal point for administration of the parish and hundred of Heartland, possibly from the late medieval period. Heartland retained its borough status until the end of the 19th century, when it displeased Queen Victoria to allow it to continue as a borough. At this point, the administration passed into the hands of the newly established parish councils, the end of 600 years of managing its own borough affairs. Note the public clock, which is one of the oldest in the country still in continuous use, having been purchased by the borough in the early 17th century and still chiming the hour. Turn right at the bottom of the square and walk into Springfield. Restart the audio there. This small cul-de-sac was used for the monthly markets with pens set up along the street. The block of houses on the right-hand side of Springfield have been built since 1860 and are sited on what was a large open space, possibly the village green, with such as a bowling green, burgess cottages and strips radiating off along the streets. At the west end of Springfield was a small agricultural unit, and this, together with a number of cottages and the bowling green, were leased from the borough by Paul Orchard of Heartland Abbey in 1760 for a period of 3,000 years. Paul Orchard then demolished some of the buildings to allow the construction of his new carriage drive to Heartland Abbey through what is known today as the Vale. We will take a while to consider two aspects of status in Heartland before we continue this walk. Heartland, since the 11th century, has been divided into two distinct sets of ownership, religious and secular. The religious landholding was based on the Augustinian monastery, while the secular, or manorial, was in the possession of the Dinham family of Norman descent. Although to be seen as distinct entities, they were heavily interrelated, the Dinhams being the benefactors of the monastery. In the first instance, we will look at the expression of status displayed by the Dinhams. A family of some status at this period would need to express this in a physical form, and at Heartland, we have all the components of this physical display: the monastery, the borough, a license to castellate their mansion, rights to a market, free warren, the right to hunt game, and deer parks, all of which came into existence in the 13th century. Although the Dinhams left Heartland in favour of their properties in South Devon, they held the manorial rights until 1501, after which date due to failure of the male line, the manorial rights became dispersed. Similarly, the religious element was in place until the dissolution, when the majority of the landholding passed into secular hands, the abbot family. With careful marriages, the abbey estate expanded, and the owners gained a status which was to replace that lost from the failure of the Dinham's divided inheritance. It is this new display that gives us the extensive parklands which are part of Hartland Abbey today. This walk is through that parkland, which incorporates the medieval deer park. It is the Dinham's deer park that is of interest to us in the first instance, as its boundaries can still be traced almost complete within the vale. Take the gate into the vale and walk on to the next gate. Restart the audio there. If at this point you look down the woodland, you can see a stone bank which runs against the cottage gardens east, across the valley and up the valley side, taking in the fields above. It also does the same on the northern side of the path. This wall forms the eastern boundary of the deer park. On both sides of the valley, it continues almost parallel, terminating in a semi-circular form against Cutliffe Lane and Cuckoo Wood Lane, enclosing some 50 acres of land. A slightly later second deer park on the north of Harton enclosed a further 80 acres. The Dinham household accounts show that they hunted extensively and displayed themselves with gold-tipped arrowheads and fine feather flights. No doubt their deer park was used for entertainment, being viewed from platforms erected to allow shooting, or from their house, which was possibly sited against the park on its eastern boundary. This is one of the most complete medieval deer parks in the West Country and a remarkable survival. We will view aspects of this at various stages of the walk. Continue on ahead. Walking the route of the carriage drive down into the vale, you will notice a few of the remaining colonnade of beeches and the rhododendron bushes. As you walk into the valley floor, note how the river has been diverted and channeled under the bridge, thus giving a clean, drier valley. Some maps give a position just over this bridge as being the site of a mansion. There is little to support this in the landscape archaeologically, or indeed at another alleged site some 500 metres west. There was a gamekeeper's lodge sited off Cutliffe Lane, which may have been a substantial building and thus giving the idea of a mansion within the park. Although the valley is now becoming overgrown, it once gave extensive vistas, enhanced by the careful planting of specimen trees and discreet usage of fencing, thus giving the appearance of parkland stretching far into the distance rather than being confined to the valley. The woodlands on the North Valley side were cut by Italian prisoners of war for use in the war effort and have regrown in a coppice style. If you know your trees, you'll see that all along the carriage drive are specimen trees of many species: black lime, Scots pine, oak, beech, maple, cherry, chestnut, rhododendron, laurel, and no doubt many more. In 1760, a correspondent, Mr. John Velley, completed the Dean Mills survey of Devon parishes on behalf of Parkland, and he wrote that Mr. Orchard will despoil the whole parish if he continues to cut timber at such a rate, which recognises that Mr. Orchard was engaged in a major revamp of the abbey, the estate farms, and landscaping the carriage drive. No doubt the felling of the timber to improve the vistas of the carriage drive went to the benefit of the construction works. Keep walking along the drive until it crosses the small river. There is also a wooden footbridge, where there is a footpath left signed for Elmscott. Restart the audio there. You should now be at the point where the carriage drive crosses the small river and a footpath to Elmscott forks up to the left. Just before the drive crosses the river, look to your left, south, across the marshy area. Around the edge of this, you can see the banking that carried the deer park enclosure across the valley. The drive crosses the water on a bridge. All bridges within the vale have no side walls, often only a metal fence. If you look closely in the undergrowth beside the bridge on both sides, you'll see the twisted metal remains of the iron railings. This style of iron fencing is a feature of much of the abbey estate, Keep your eyes open for it. And many of these fences were made by the Damon family of Smiths, who also held an annual contract to tar the fencing. Now take the Elmscott footpath left as it climbs up until you reach the stone stile. Restart the audio there. This is the closest point at which you can easily access the remains of the medieval Deer Park wall. Look to your left and see the fine built wall that runs along the edge of the woodland, and note the difference in ground levels. It is much higher on the field on the other side. This allowed wild deer to jump into the park, but no deer could jump out. At various points along this wall are stone step stiles giving access. Cross over the stile into the green lane beyond and turn right down the hill back to the valley bottom. When the deer park was created, the way was deliberately diverted with this sharp turn down into the valley through this sunken section to prevent access to the deer park. Follow it back down into the vale and note the way sections of wall have been incorporated into the banks to form a boundary. Keep going until the drive crosses the river again at the next bridge, and then restart the audio. You are now on the drive where it crosses the river again on another typical bridge with no sides. There is an interesting picture taken at this location in around 1890, which shows the whole area as pristine with two fine ladies walking along the drive. If you stand at this point and look in all directions, it becomes a central feature of the parkland, taking in both the medieval and the 18th century landscape. You are now standing at the western edge of the medieval deer park. By then looking southeast, back along the drive towards Hartland, one would see the approaching open spaces of the parkland, which formed part of Ford Farm, all with fine specimen trees and decorative plantings. Turning south, you now look up a small valley which runs towards Cuckoo Wood or St. Leonard's. This valley was once dammed and held a shallow pool of water sufficient for waterfowl and water plants, and a small track on its western edge led to the kennels where the Abbey Pack was once kept, and Cuckoo Wood Cottage, which for a time was home to the Abbey gamekeeper. The damming of this valley was twofold. First, retaining water for the waterfowl, but then it also provided a controlled supply of water via a sluice for a splendid water feature further down the drive. Look ahead and left, and you can pick out a leat which runs down the valley side on the northwest, from this point towards the water feature. Turning north, you can see the Green Lane wind its way up Cutliffe Lane as it skirted the Deer Park on its way to Hartland. Continue walking forward northwest as the carriage drive continues its way towards the Abbey, but now the scenery changes. The valley becomes narrow and very wet from this point, with a lot of rising water. To counteract this, numerous stone drains were laid and the rising water channeled into ponds on either side of the drive. The river itself was contained within stone walls, which can still be seen. It is still possible to see the remains of the ponds, and at appropriate seasons, they still display their plantings, such as water iris and yellow flag. The area now has become overgrown with willow, thorn, and hazel. The drains are silted, and thus the ground has again become waterlogged. Before this growth, it would have been possible to see up the valley sides and therefore view the fine trees planted on the hillsides and again the illusion of distant parkland. As you walk, keep an eye on the left for the water leat as it appears to rise up the hillside on the southwest valley side. Continue walking until the drive crosses the river at the next bridge and then restart the audio. You should now be on the next bridge. This one gives a glimpse of how water was harnessed to provide the power to drive machinery. Although having recently become severely damaged by motorcycles, the weir is almost complete. The sluice is now sealed, but the leat is still very clear. This is one of two that provided the water for Hartland Mill. Continue walking along the carriage drive. A short distance further along, and on your left-hand side, you will notice that the leat we have followed now ceases. At this point was a stone cascade over which the water was allowed to flow down into a pond before returning to the river, a rather dramatic but popular feature of landscape design. Continue walking some distance along the drive, passing through a meadow until you reach the point where the carriage drive passes under the main Stoke Road, which is carried over it by a bridge. Then restart the audio. The carriage drive now enters a meadow which is surrounded by laurels, rhododendrons and the Himalayan balsam. The drive then passes under the main Stoke Road while sweeping along the valley before entering the Abbey grounds. You are now standing just before the bridge that carries the main Stoke Road over the carriage drive. The bridge over the drive was rebuilt in the 19th century and is unusual in that it spans both a river and a drive. The road was the Turnpike Road from Hartland Quay to Biddeford, established in the early 18th century, which, through its associated road improvements, gave us the main road we use today. Whilst driving along the road, it is possible to see the diversions, widening, easing of gradients, etc., that were undertaken in the pursuit of profit from road traffic. In very general terms, the turnpikes were seldom profitable and were dealt a death blow by the advance of the railways. Instead of going under the road, take the small slip path up onto the road and carefully cross over to the other side. Restart the audio there. This point on the walk is the industrial heart of the Abbey estate. Immediately facing is the reconstructed facade of Hartland Mill, a rather grand building now, but which housed, at the rear, all the mechanism for an overshot grain mill, a grist mill. Originally, a track passed the mill into what is now woodland beyond to the Abbey workshops. On the right of the mill can be seen the mill leat, which emerges from a tunnel under the road, carrying water from the weir we previously saw. The large set of houses above the mill ground to the right is the site of the parish workhouse, which was operational until the mid-19th century, holding up to 60 unemployed or impoverished parishioners. Previous to being a workhouse, this was the site of a number of almshouses, but the land was exchanged for a more convenient site at Well Lane in Hartland. Turning left, north, from the front of Hartland Mill, take the public footpath towards the river. You now rejoin the carriage drive in front of a white cottage, Glen Cottage, once home to the Abbey head gardener, but previously a second mill house. Note the channel dug across the frontage, which took the Ouse water back to the stream. The last actual mill on this site was a single-storey building, now converted into a garage on the northern boundary of Glen Cottage. The only evidence of the mill is at its rear, where the water channel can be seen, which fed an undershot mill wheel, with water stored in a pond east of the building. It's possible that an early mill existed in the remains of buildings now within the cottage garden. If you wish, you can take a short diversion from this walk by continuing along the carriage drive, which takes you to the open road and the present entrance to Hartland Abbey. Hartland Abbey is open from Easter to October and some days between, and is a beautiful house with formal and kitchen gardens, wonderful woodland walks to the coast and a fine tea room. An entrance charge is payable. Should you wish to do so, stop this audio and restart it when you return. Otherwise, continue a short way along and then turn right on the track running behind Glen Cottage. This track is not an extension of the carriage drive, but until the late 20th century was what would be today described as a small bridleway. The track was enlarged to allow mechanical removal of the mature timber. Follow this track for some distance, walking until you reach a small stand of yew trees on your right next to a small ruin, and restart the audio at this point. You should now be at a small stand of yew trees overlooking the valley next to a small ruin. If you look into the woodland opposite, you may be able to pick out the ruins of the Abbey workshops, which until sold to the owners of Hartland Mill, still housed some of the Abbey carriages in a tumble-down lean-to. Many Heartland children have enjoyed a game of Wild West stagecoach games in this building. In the river below the workshops once stood a substantial weir to feed a leat which crossed the meadow to the Glen Cottage Mill, often known in historic documents as Cheristow Mill. The weir was washed away in a storm and the leat has become redundant, although it is easily possible to see the cutting in the riverbank from where it started. The ruinous building by the yew trees has been used as a deer shelter, cowshed and kennels at various times. Continue along the path east. Note the second leat feeding Heartland Mill running along the side of the southern valley. Walk until you emerge from the woodland and arrive at a gate and a stile into the meadow beyond, and restart the audio there. You should be at the gated entrance and stile to the meadow. Just behind you is a footpath forking up the valley side to Cheristow. This is a sunken path and may represent the boundary of the Northern Deer Park. Climb over the stile in front of you into the meadow. On your right is a footpath that returns to Heartland via Sawpit Plantation. This is also the site of a further weir which complemented the one by the carriage drive and fed Heartland Mill. Continue walking straight ahead, eastwards, through this meadow until you reach the gate, then restart the audio. You should now have walked through the meadow and arrived at the gate. At this point, view the substantial wall running north from the gate up the hill and similarly down to the river and up the opposite valley side. This is the eastern boundary of the second but larger deer park. The south boundary runs along the hedge line on the horizon in front of the housing and encompasses the site of the magnetic survey station, returning down the valley and across north, taking in what are today an area of woodlands and some fields, a total of some 80 acres. The woodlands in this area are mainly oaks and remind us of the thriving trade in oak bark stripped from trees and sold to the tannery in Heartland for crushing to extract tannin. A further flourishing trade was the collection and sale of gorse, or as commonly called firs. This was sold as a crop and used as firing locally, or transported into Biddeford or even Barnstable to fire the pottery kilns. Continue through the woodland until you reach the road, then restart the audio. This road is a fine example of a Devon sunken lane and is allegedly the home to one of the few ghosts Heartland has. A monk appears walking the lane, but for what reason is a fact lost to memory. Turn right and cross the bridge. On your left, across the meadow, is Tucking Mill, the last such mill carrying this name in the parish. It was once a site of industrial activity, as it worked to pummel the woven cloths produced by Heartland weavers, the cloths being hung out on racks in the meadows running up the valley. The path in front of Tucking Mill is a public footpath and can be walked if one wishes to view the buildings and the leat. Walk until you reach the fork, then take the left-hand road and proceed up the hill towards Heartland. Restart the audio there. As you pass the small number of cottages on this hill, you may like to consider that each was given permission to be built by the governors of the borough and from its wastes. The lease states that a substantial house had to be built each by a specified date and then an annual rent paid to the borough. If the rent failed to be paid, the house became the property of the borough. At the top of this hill is a concreted lane leading to Hind Harton Farm. Although the farm is private, it is public until the farm gate. If you walk that short distance, it's possible to see one of the two remaining Harton Borough marker stones still existing. The Harton Town Trust recreated a beating of the bounds, which attracted a large crowd of eager walkers who on completion were given a commemorative medal and certificate. Please observe the privacy of Hind Harton Farm. Return to the road and continue until you arrive at Heartland Primary School. Then turn right and follow this road back into the square and the car park. This is the end of Walk 2, the Parkland Walk. We hope you enjoyed it. There are three more walks in the Heritage series that can be downloaded from our site. And also, for families, the wonderful Heartland Treasure Trail from the award-winning Treasure Trails Company. Plus, There are 6 beautiful walks to download in print format to help you explore our beautiful coast and countryside. All are available from www.heartlandpeninsula.co.uk. Thank you for listening.